enough to tempt your palate, and they make the rounds on the town in a maximum limousine. You found the right radio show for a couple of guys who are in the know about the best places to go in the local scene. Chef and the Fat Man, Chef and the Fat Man. Why should you ever trust a cook that isn't portly? You found the right radio show for a couple of guys who are in the know about the best places to go in the local scene.
Welcome back, my friend. Chef and the Fat Man live at the Incredible Cook's Warehouse, where we have been cooking up. Chef Matt South has been making his disgusting kale, white bean, and whatever soup. If you just took the kale out of it and used saltines, you would be there.
I don't think we can talk anymore.
Really?
I don't think so. Well, I think we've found our hit.
So what are you trying to say? You're trying to say that you're not going to allow me to have your soup?
No soup for you.
You son. Now that, you know what? I'll tell you what. To show what a man I am.
You're going
to
try.
That was kind of a wimpy way of saying no soup for you. I'm going to go to the person that has become iconic in the histoire of the genre of television. I have the man himself to say.
No soup for you.
There it is, my friends, Larry Thomas. How you doing, Larry? Welcome, Chef and the Fat Man, baby.
Very good, although I have to disagree with your taste in soup. My goodness. Saltines instead of kale.
Absolutely. That's why you're the soup Nazi, and I'm the fat but congenial and jovial host. Because, see, I realize that the average soup-eating public is really a saltine to soup guy and gal, not a kale and rutabaga, and you know, all that nasty stuff. Soup is meant to be eat with crackers. But we'll talk. Larry, welcome. I mean, we are so honored today. We have a great group of people. Of course, Larry Thomas, iconic, the man. Let's, before we introduce Jamie and Seb, let's talk about what you've done. I mean, here you are, you're working a bail bondsman, you go to junior college, you got this great thought, I'm going to be a journalist. Things kind of fell apart after you got the acting bug.
They did. They really, really did. It, you know, you got to blame that beautiful girl named Stacy, because she was a theater major and I was trying to get a date, and what better way to do it than to take some classes, right? So that changed my life.
Well, we won't go into how far it changed it, because this is a family show. But so you get the acting bug bites you. Did you ever, in your wildest dreams, I mean, everybody has goals. Did you think to yourself, one day I'm going to be here? Or were you like so many others that say, one day I hope to get a job?
Yeah, that was me. That was me. I remember even saying back then, a bunch of actors, young actors, were giving their reasons for, you know, one guy's going, I want to be the greatest actor that ever lived, and got around to me, and I just said, I just want to make some money at this. I just want to, you know, if I go do this, I don't want to starve.
And obviously you didn't, but it came about in kind of a different way. I mean, you one day you're a bail bondsman, the next thing you get a call, and they tell you what?
And they said, you're going to audition for the show Seinfeld, and all we can tell you about the character right now is that they call him the soup Nazi.
And that's kind of a, it's interesting because most of the time they give you more in depth about the character, so it gives you a chance.
Oh yeah, and most of the time you get like a scene on paper. I didn't have anything on paper, so I spent that evening just improvising. What would this guy called the soup Nazi do? And they did tell me that he was Middle Eastern, so I had Lawrence of Arabia on videotape. So that was really just an impression of Omar Sharif.
And I wonder if Omar ever got a chance. I don't know.
Yeah, I always hope to think maybe he liked the episode and maybe he heard somewhere that was me imitating him, but because he was quite the actor.
But one of the great things about you two is your voice. You've got a naturally great voice for radio, which is, I'm glad you're going back to New York, because I don't need any more competition.
Any competition to knock you off the you off the heap.
You aren't big enough to knock me off. You and maybe the rest of the crew. I'm rather poor.
Well, there's a few of us here.
Yeah. But anyway, so you get this, you walk in, there's all these amazing people sitting there, and then you've got to just, I mean, you dress kind of not traditional.
Right. I was in an army uniform and a beret. And let's face it, I looked like Saddam Hussein, which was kind of an accident, not really the idea.
You do kind of have that look.
Yeah. Quite a look for a Russian Jew, huh?
Yeah, well, there
from
you go.
Brooklyn.
You know, there you go.
My mom's very proud. I've played the soup Nazi, Saddam Hussein, and Osama bin Laden.
You're on a roll.
I'm on a roll.
Maybe one day you can play the fat man.
Yeah.
Of course, you'd have to plump up for it.
I would definitely.
You didn't have to say it that energetically, all right? So anyway, you go ahead and you meet, and then during the process, you actually see one of Seinfeld's buddies walk in who you thought, oh, no, he's going to and he's gonna try out for the role, and you're thinking, oh, my God, I don't have a chance. But you blew them away.
I hope to think so.
Well, obviously.
I got hired anyway.
And very quickly. I mean,
yes.
It wasn't like you had to wait a week or two.
Right. I got hired that same day, you know, and I went right onto the set, and Jerry came up to me, and he just said, you know, man, forget about the direction I gave you in the audition. Just do what you did when you walked in. So I got to, like, do, you know, the pleasure of playing that role is that's exactly the way I wanted to do it, which you don't always get to do.
Well, and of course, the rest is history. That 1995, 1996, all of a sudden, you're up there for an Emmy, and you had to do what we had to do, which is kind of unique. You had to pay the $100.
Yeah, I had to pay the $100.
That is
very
crazy?
True. That is very true.
I had to pay the $100 when I got a James Beard. I had to pay the $100 to get nominated for the James Beard. You have to pay $100 after they say you're nominated. So, you know what, Lair? Besides the devilish good looks that we share,
yes.
The iconic bodies that we share.
Well, you do have good taste, if you're going to say that.
Obviously, with the crackers and the soup. But we had to spend $100 each to get our nomination.
Yep.
But that's all right. That's all right. And then, of course, did you ever think that the character would maintain such a high level of acceptance and appreciation and respect over what's been 20 years?
Yeah, you know, I could never have dreamt that. I thought it was just going to get forgotten after a while, like everything else I've ever done. But
no, wait a minute. I feel for you.
But seriously, it's an amazing thing that the show has, you know, spanned generations.
It really has.
And the character has emerged, sort of. I mean, all the characters were great on the series. But I'm so, you know, amazed that the character has emerged to be kind of remembered, you know, in and out of the series, you know? So that's a great thing.
And here you
thing.
Are today representing, it, I mean, you talk about full circle.
Yes.
I mean, you go from kind of playing the character that kind of epitomized, wasn't exactly at all like the real person, but but it became such an iconic character, and now you're absolutely representing the soup that actually has come about because Seb and Al got together. They put this amazing thing together. Then they bring Jamie in. They bring in all these Titanic-like creatures to bring it all together. Then they add you to the mix. You couldn't have thought that in 1995.
You said that like a recipe. That was very. That was actually pretty good.
Well, thank you very much.
I
do this for a few
years. I like the stuff you sprinkle on top of the soup.
Yeah, it's called BS. But and I don't mean Barbara Streisand. But anyway, you know, so in fact, we're going to celebrate a little bit. In fact, in the next segment, we're going to let you and Chef Matt share because you have a great passion and love for cooking.
I do.
And
I
you
do.
Have a cookbook, which I hope we'll talk about, that's out there. And I'm going to talk to you about it because I got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, okay.
All right. But anyway, also we're going to introduce you to Jamie and to Seb. These two guys have formed a partnership, and along with Larry, they have really come up with some amazing soups that have become so much a part of the culture of New York City. But they're making them so they can bring them to you, to your home. They're with Kroger. Kroger's an outstanding company. We've worked with them before. They've got a great PR firm. They got the whole thing working. We're sharing. We're eating. We're having a ton of fun right here. Now, Larry, there's one thing. Did you, I mean, were all the characters, when you met them in person, are they like typical Hollywood people when you got on the set, or were they really nice and be honest?
No, I honestly have to say they were incredibly nice, very welcoming. you know, just for Jerry, who's a very powerful guy on TV at the time, to say to me, forget about
the directions he gave you, do it.
You did. So you can imagine how his ego never got away with him. And everybody else was just as nice on top.
And talking about nice, we got nice, we got great, we got food, we got fun, we have a celebration of the good life. What better place to celebrate with the Soup Nazi, Jamie, Seb, Chef Matt, yours truly, the Fat Man, shaking it up, taking it to the streets of Marietta, Georgia at the Cook's Warehouse in fashionable East Cobb. We'll be right back and taking it to your ear, baby.